From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of May, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the trade in Chicago on this Monday with Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net. We'll take those same marketplaces up in a broader context with Ed Usset, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota with Extension there. And then as we close out our time together, we'll encapsulate it all as it's related to the weather forecast for North and South America and maybe a few other growing regions across the planet on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, whenever you'd like at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Some breaking news from the Illinois Department of Public Health today as we get started. This related to cattle mostly, though there are some human impacts of the Asian longhorn tick, which has now been found in Morgan County, Illinois. That happened on the 12th of April. The tick can cause disease in cattle, which makes them lethargic and to go off feed. University of Illinois Extension beef cattle educator Teresa Steck says there are things that producers across the state should now watch for and do.
So what we're asking livestock producers is to be vigilant and also to pour their cattle. If they get an opportunity to mow their pastures, that will help out in keeping the tick off their cattle.
The Department of Public Health, by the way, is working closely with the Department of Agriculture to monitor the presence of the tick and to investigate the risk it carries to both humans and livestock. We'll have more on this story in the future. Turning our attention to the futures, July corn today settled up 8¾ cents at $4.69, September at $4.76¾, 7½ higher, and December at $4.88½, up 5¾. July soybeans gained 33¾ cents, settled there at $12.48¾, November at $12.19¾, up 18¾. Bean meal $15.40 higher, the bean oil up 76 cents. Wheat futures were up 26¼ cents in the July at $6.48¾ for the soft red, and the hard red 25 higher at $6.75¼. Here to explain why it all happened is Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net in Normal, Illinois. Rally. Why does it continue to rally, Kurt?
Oh boy, giddy up. Where's the Waco connection here? You know, Danny, Dan Zwigger, he'd be all over this. This is fantastic. Fantastic to see an up move here, but basically Texas flooded. Planting progress is slow, but not too far behind the average. Massive water in Brazil, Rio, just devastation there. And we're seeing basically arid, dry conditions on the Russian wheat crop. There has not been a whole lot of sales out of Russia lately. So as Mike would always say, wheat will lead. So somebody's taking leadership here. I mean, we've got all the commodities hitting on all cylinders today in the grain complex, which is great news. This afternoon, planting progress report. Corn's expected to be 40% complete as a nation. There's areas that haven't moved very far, and there's areas that's pretty well done in a few isolated locations. 40% average trade guess. Last year we're 49, but the average is 39, so we're just right at the average. Soybeans, 29% complete as a nation. A year ago we were 35%, but the average is 30%. So, you know, we're right there at the average. These gains were not expected to be a whole lot because of the wet weather. Looks like we got some additional moisture coming at us here for the next few days. So, you know, that's going to continue to be a topic. But the main thing is that news and a lot of little fundamental news all was enough here for the last few trading days to get the commodity funds on the buy side. A lot of analysts expected this for about the last 4 months. Now it's really actually fallen in place. When we came in to midday and through here, They were quite aggressive on the buy side. As you look now at like the 100-day, we're above that. And if you look at the 200-day, that's the next upside objective. So we're cutting these programs or cutting above these resistance levels, and it's just generating some technical buying. For example, the fund's bought 8,900 contracts of wheat, 14,500 corn, 11,100 contracts of soybeans, 9,100 contracts of meal, and 4,500 contracts of bean oil just going into midday. So that's where the buying power is coming from. There's not a whole lot of selling. Now, where guys have the crop in the ground, they're rewarding the market. But when you're looking at some areas with some standing water, guys aren't too excited about making some new sales. So until we get some more of the crop in the ground, the producer is going to be kind of limited in here. Now, the key, what I've seen over the years, what you might want to think about, I'm not a crop insurance agent, but if you take your spring price, try to improve on that. Corn, $4.66, you know, if we get up to $5, that's about 40 cents better. Raise your price floor. Same thing on the beans here. It won't be long if we keep this up. We'll be a dollar above the spring price. Raise that price floor because we're still subject to downside risk. There's a lot of moving parts around the world. And so you got to kind of stick to the concept that you pretty well can raise it, but let's try to get the best price for it, Todd.
Okay, so wheat has been rallying for what, about 3 weeks, more than 90 cents. Corn and soybeans particularly, in the last several sessions rallying. How much longer do you think that the funds will be exiting their positions, and what happens when they're done?
Well, the green lines cross the red line, so they'll keep the hammer down here for a while until they get to where they want to be. When you look at corn or soybeans, oftentimes these buying sprees last about 3 to 4 days, and we're just about right there. So we'll see what happens here as we move forward. But it wouldn't surprise me if the market does not correct. If it does correct, they'll continue to be buyers and try to get back to a neutral position here as we go into the growing season. So this is just idea for the producer that needs to make catch-up sales and take advantage of it too. When you look at some retracement levels, a lot of analysts have some upside targets on different retracement levels. I'd have some resting orders up there to kind of add to some sales and get caught up to where you want to be.
All right. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net in Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. Just click and play from the website, willag.org. Or if you prefer, you can search us out in your favorite podcast applications. Look for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, too. Ed Ossett now joins us, agricultural economist with University of Minnesota Extension. Hi, Ed. Thank you for being with us. This week, the United States Department of Agriculture will release its official, for the first time, WASDE figures related to the new crop corn and soybeans, or those that are going into the ground. What will you be watching closely?
Oh, I think I'll be, like everyone else, looking at the planted acres. I think that's the big number. Will it change much from the March planning intentions report? If there are any surprises there, and I guess I would be surprised if there is a big surprise. I think they've already shown their hand on trend line yields in their February outlook conference, and I would expect them to hold to that because we just don't have any information to change it at this point.
Well, I have a secondary question about that because their trend line yield at 181 bushels is below last year's 181.5 trend and what probably is more likely 182.1 if you're just following along. Why do you think they did that?
Not sure. Not sure. Don't know their methodology, if you will, on trend line yields. They all sound like big numbers, and yet, didn't we have a record crop last year?
We did.
I mean, when all was said and done, all the issues we had, it's too dry, it's too this, and mainly too dry in many parts of the upper Midwest, and yet we delivered a record crop. We've had a lot of rain here. I sure don't hear complaints in Minnesota, which has been dry in the last couple of years. I don't hear complaints about the lack of subsoil moisture right now. In fact, we've got planting delays in part of southern Minnesota.
Turn your attention to the marketplace directly, given the planting delays.
Mm-hmm.
And because you have been so involved in the wheat trade over the years, and I'm hopeful that you might have some answers to this, but maybe not. Wheat has been the leader for quite a while now in this marketplace. Those soybeans have stepped up. Why do you suppose wheat has become a leader? It appears that there's some issues around the world, but gosh, it's still only, first week of May.
I really think part of this is just flat out short cover in the wheat market. The funds were very large shorts and had big positions in there. By the way, I'm looking at the wheat market right now, Chicago, July futures back on April 19th, 3 weeks ago. Is that even 3 weeks? $5.53. Today, trading almost 95 cents higher today. A heck of a move. The Kansas City market, a very similar move. Minneapolis market, not as much. I really think it's short covering. We've had some, it's dry in western Kansas. That's a concern. The Russian crop, there are murmurs about it not being as good as it has been. And that would be big news on the world stage. And I'm just thinking that these funds thought, well, maybe it's time to cover. And guess what? They're trying to buy, and no one's really a willing seller at those numbers. So we've had quite the short covering rally. And I can't be encouraging to me, Todd. They're still short in the corn and the soybeans, too. It just shows you how quick things can move if things aren't going real smooth.
Well, if they stop trying to buy, does that mean there will be a quick and startling fall in the wheat market?
We got to have sellers to make that happen. And we're coming upon a time we should see some selling pressure coming up in the next month. So, yeah, it could reverse course. But I think, I guess I'd be shocked to see us go back down another 95 cents in the next 3 weeks like it came up. We're having a second thoughts, a rethink on the wheat market. Maybe it's not as bearish as we thought it was.
Are you rethinking corn and soybean as well?
I appreciate the rally. I really do. I think there's a lot of listeners out there who have old crop in the bin. They haven't gotten new crop priced. We are a long ways away from what I would call an impressive price on July corn or new crop December corn. And yet, December corn is 40 cents off its lows. That's a nice thing. It's given us another shot to think about getting started on next year's crop. November soybeans back over $12 again, 90 cents off their lows. Nearby prices, July corn at 460. Again, are these great prices for corn? No, they aren't, but they're well off their lows. And for people who haven't got anything on the books or got a lot of old crop in the bin, I think this is time to step in, make a sale, and hope like hell you're wrong. Okay, that's what you want, that those early sales to be wrong, but you need to take advantage of rallies this time of year.
Why is it important that producers make the early sales? I mean, you've made a case here that you make the sale and you hope that it's as my brothers would say, man, I hope that's the worst sale you make for the year.
You're shooting for a good average. I mean, this is what a producer is really shooting for. We read the news and follow the market, and we follow Todd and the brilliant guests he gets on to talk about the market. We're trying to find the high, okay? We're trying to find it, but you're not going to sell the high. You're looking for a good average. So as I look at December corn close to 490 right now, you make that sale, and you hope it's wrong. Well, you hope you got chances above $5 or $5.50 later in the summer. But the fact is, by the time we get to harvest, if all things click, and I'm going back to this, we got a good number of acres planted. We got not a trend line yield, but we got two or three bushels above the trend line yield. That 490 December 24 corn could be 430. I'm not predicting. I don't want that to happen. But let's not have blinders on and say, well, that couldn't happen. Yeah, it could. Yeah, it could. And if it does, 490 beats the heck out of that.
I know you've made this point already on old crop, but one last thing for old crop before I let you go. You have a rule of thumb which says thou shalt not carry old crop corn into July. Are you still in July, or have you moved that forward this year?
No. It is what I call the 11th commandment of grain marketing. It is thou shalt not hold unpriced grain in storage after July 1. And that's just all based on patterns that you'll see it in any long-term trend in corn and soybean prices. You get into July and into August, the average price is going down and heading down into harvest. Are there exceptions? Oh, all sorts of them. Absolutely. We've had great July rallies and great August rallies. But on average, if you're doing that every year, if you're holding grain into July and August, you're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. So if you have to own something, I tell people get the cash grain sold and re-own a cheap option, maybe on December futures. Farmers will say, yeah, but options cost money. And I'll go back to my trends and seasonal patterns and say, that's costing you money too. The options at least are decent enough to give you the price beforehand. Okay. So I'll stand by that, even though there are exceptions to that rule. But you really want to have old crop cleaned up by the end of June. If you want to play the upside in the market, you've got new crop that might not be priced. There's your upside potential, or maybe grab some cheap options.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Ed Usett, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota with Extension there. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Time now to check in on the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Mark Russo is here from Everstream Analytics. Good Monday afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us again.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's start in South America, where you and I have had discussions about heavy rainfall in the southern regions, particularly Rio Grande do Sul. My read of what happened in Chicago today is that it must be going to rain more there, even if not a lot. What can you tell me today?
Well, Todd, in Rio Grande do Sul, after the torrential rainfall and subsequent flooding there late last week and into the weekend, the pattern still looks to stay active in RGDS. Granted, they are getting a break right now. Today is dry, tomorrow's dry, but it does look like rains return on Wednesday, and then they remain in this kind of in and out rain pattern here on a daily basis in the rest of this week and then on into next week as well. So there's simply no sign of any extended stretches of dry weather there in Rio Grande do Sul, which is needed now.
Further to the north in the primary second crop or safrina growing areas of Mato Grosso, they went dry earlier than expected, I believe. Is there any rain in the forecast for them?
Yeah, not much here across Brazil safrina looking out over the next 2 weeks. The only part of the belt that could see some rain activity, albeit minor, looks to be in southern Paraná, so just the far southern acreage there for safrina. The other item of note is that temperatures will be warmer than normal across the region. That heat already started last week, continues over the next 2 weeks, not as anomalous as last week, but that warmth will also start depleting topsoil moisture levels there.
In the United States, farmers have been happy with the regenerative rainfall that has come so far this spring, though they'd like to get into the field again, particularly across parts of Iowa, Minnesota. Will that be the case this week?
It's going to be pretty difficult here the next several days. In fact, over the next 4 to 5 days, the central U.S. will be pretty active with widespread and scattered rains across most of the major ag belts, including the western Midwest, and also across the northern plains and Canadian prairies. Also going to be the threat of severe weather over the next several days. So as a result of this, fieldwork operations for much of this week are going to be on the slower side. That does look to change here as the pattern is looking drier, kind of starting over the weekend and into next week. It looks like a drier pattern here, not totally wide open, but much less frequent rains across the belt and helping to improve the planting pace next week.
I may note that some of the storm systems over the weekend backed or came through portions of Kansas, though I don't know whether the furthest west parts of that state, the wheat growing areas, were able to catch anything. How are they doing?
Yeah, portions of western Kansas did catch some rains over the weekend. In fact, the rain activity was more widespread than and heavier than expected. And so that did provide really the first substantial rains in western Kansas in quite some time. And looking ahead here, there are some additional opportunities coming up. They don't look as good as this past event, but nonetheless should help provide at least a few more, at least light to moderate rains.
Dry conditions in the Russian wheat growing regions have driven that marketplace higher for about 3 weeks now. Will they get rain?
It does not appear that they're going to see any meaningful rainfall the next 2 weeks in that dry southern acreage. So it's kind of more of the same. The dry southern half of the belt stays dry. The wetter part of the northern belt remains active here coming up. So no sign of any improvement in that critical dry southern acreage.
We'll check in with you again next week.
Sounds good, Todd.
Hey, thank you, Mark. That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.